Senate Republicans are imploring, please just stop. This hour, where does the president's feud with Senator Bob Corker leave the GOP agenda? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our political analysts today, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, will discuss the consequences of the increasingly ugly tit-for-tat between President Trump and Bob Corker. Also, we'll discuss the repeal of Obama's Clean Power Plan, the rollback of the Obamacare birth control mandate, and plenty more. Join our conversation for this Politics Day. First, this hour's news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our chance, our weekly set-aside time to pick over the latest politics. There are always plenty. As of 2016, there has been a relentless flow of developments every week. Joining us this week, Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Ben.
Tim Hagel is with us in the Iowa City studio, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
So we want to invite you as well to join our conversation as we pick through a number of things that you've been hearing on our news, reported on by NPR and so forth. We want to ask you if you are one of the over 800,000 Iowans who voted for Donald Trump. Is this what you expected? What are your hopes now for the conservative agenda that put Donald Trump in the White House in terms of we have tax reform still ahead of us, the infrastructure bill, immigration, Obamacare? Okay, well, that was a fail, it seems. But what do you have in terms of hopes for the conservative agenda that put Donald Trump in the White House? We know you're out here. Over 800,000 Iowans voted for Donald Trump. What are your views? What are your thoughts? What are your questions for Wayne and Tim? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Let's talk a little bit to start off our program, Tim and Wayne. I'm eager to get your view on the feud that has been going on for the last few days. Let's recap a little bit of it between President Trump and senior GOP Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. Speaking to reporters last week on Capitol Hill, Tennessee, Senator Bob Corker, reminding everyone he's the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, very important committee, said that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Defense Secretary James Mattis, and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly help separate our country from chaos.
I think Secretary Tillerson, Secretary Mattis, and Chief of Staff Kelly are those people that help separate our country from chaos. And I support them very much. I don't know what he may have said after the briefing. I see what's happening here. I deal with people throughout the administration, and he, from my perspective, is in an incredibly frustrating place where, as I watch, okay, and I can watch very closely on many occasions, he ends up not being supported in the way that I would hope a Secretary of State would be supported.
Okay, amidst the period of trading insults between the president and Senator Corker on Twitter, Sunday morning the president accused Corker of deciding not to run for re-election because he, quote, didn't have the guts. The senator shot back in his own tweet, "It's a shame the White House has become an adult daycare center." Senator Corker decided to sit down with the New York Times for an interview following that. Here's part of that recorded conversation.
Mattis and Tillerson and Kelly last week,
yeah,
is, again, it's this
long as there's people like that around him, who are able to talk him down, and, you know, when it gets spun up, you know, calm him down and continue to work with him before a decision is made, I think we'll be fine. I don't, I do worry that he's, it's sometimes I feel like he's on a reality show of some kind, you know, when he's talking about these big foreign policy issues. And, he doesn't realize that, you know, that we could be heading towards World War III with the kind of comments that he's making. And it's like it's an act of comedy.
Okay, Senator Bob Corker there, part of a recorded conversation with the New York Times. Wayne Moore, you've been watching politics for decades. Adult daycare center, talk him down as if he's a jumper on a rooftop. This has to be unprecedented.
Yeah, I don't know of anything previously that was at all like this. I mean, I think the underlying problem here is Trump's uncensored tweets that have made foreign policy making extremely difficult and often misunderstood or often sending the wrong kinds of messages to foreign countries. And so I can understand why Senator Corker is very upset about that. And the fact that these are often impulsive things without any previous briefings for the president and no linkages to the policy community at all when he makes them. And then the second thing that is really troubling is the president picking a fight with a chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It seems to me that's the worst thing that you want to do in terms of not only in terms of dealing with the Senate, but also in terms of dealing with other countries who are somewhat confused, I think, in terms of what Trump's foreign policy actually is.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, before we go to Tim, though, because your expertise is also in foreign policy here, Wayne, Bob Corker made a comment for that, and we mentioned he is the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Here's a quote from one of those interviews. A lot of people think that there is some kind of good cop, bad cop act underway, this in reference to Korea, but that's just not true. So here's a senior Republican with an inside lane, inside information. We've been talking about good cop, bad cop in this analysis. I don't know if you raised it or not, Wayne, but Corker goes on to say, I know he has hurt in several instances. He has hurt us as it relates to negotiations that were underway by tweeting things out. So when we ascribe sophistication to what Trump is doing, do we have the definitive answer? It's not a sophisticated tactical move.
Right. I mean, the sense is that he sees something that he objects or gets angry about, and then he immediately tweets about it, and that it sometimes can be very problematic.
Tim Hagel, give us your opening volley.
Going back to your original question, this is certainly something that's unprecedented. Trump is unprecedented. He basically has that outsider's view of things. And, you know, it's interesting, and kind of following up on a little bit of what Wayne was saying, is that, you know, we're always not sure, is this a brilliant strategy on the part of Trump, or is it just being totally impulsive? Is he purposely—
Hasn't that been answered by Bob Corker with an insider's
Bob
view?
Bob Corker has his view, I suppose others—
But he's one of the closest Capitol Hill friends of the president,
and
right?
Trump apparently had called him, or the people had Corker call Trump, and so forth. But still, you have to wonder about this. And if nothing else, from Trump's perspective, he's basically there to shake up the system that he didn't think it was producing the results that he thought were good for America. So we're going to shake it up. The problem is that are you shaking it up in a way that produces some positive results, or are you shaking up in a way that's going to cause more trouble? And you know, I've been on a show for a Chinese television outlet and talk to a Japanese academic. And as Wayne was suggesting, that some of our allies and other people we deal with, Japan, China, and others, are concerned about what's going on. They're just not really sure in terms of the overall result of this.
Okay, let's go to our callers. I asked at the outset, are you one of the over 800,000 Iowans who voted for Donald Trump. Donald Trump won Iowa by almost 10% over Hillary Clinton. Let's get a few of our listeners on the air. Terry is joining us from Tama. Hi, Terry. What's your view? Terry, are you there? Problems with our phone system. Terry, one more time. Let's try Patrick in. I'm going to put Terry on hold. Let's try Patrick in Iowa City. Hi, Patrick, are you there?
I am. I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to see if you had seen one of the latest newswire flashes regarding the meeting in which allegedly Rex Tillerson referred to the president as a moron, where apparently he was advocating for a 10x increase in our nuclear arsenal, he being President Trump, which I'm stunned beyond comprehension. I'm 64 years old. I voted for a lot of candidates that aren't traditional candidates. I consider myself not a member of either party these days, probably as frustrated as Trump voters, but I just didn't see him as a solution. Bottom line is, it's his complete and abject apparent ignorance of history, his lack of literacy when it comes to reading, his focus on media as his only means of information, and not only media, but self-supporting media, ideologically crafted through people like Fox. And enough about that, but I just would appreciate your thoughts regarding what I think are the terrifying lack of depth, I'll call it ignorance, of this man that is ostensibly, and I thought it was a great comment, shaking things up. But what is he shaking up for? What to what end?
Mm-hmm.
And these,
got it.
I would appreciate continued thoughts on that. Thank
okay,
you.
Patrick, thank you for your view. Join our conversation 1-866-780-9100. Tim Hagel, you had the shaking up comment, and naturally falling on to what end? Shaking it up with a strategy, a purpose? Can you see that strategy? I mean, if you say, let's take this latest feud as an example. This feud, the deteriorating relationship with the leaders in his own party, through the eyes of the president, put yourself in his shoes. Explain to us, why is he doing it? What is his strategy? What could be the possible way forward that the president sees in his tactic here?
Yeah, and again, you'll get different views on this as whether you're sort of basically pro-Trump or anti-Trump. But, you know, I suppose the best argument from Trump's point of view is that you want to shake up the system, do things differently, because the way it had been going on wasn't working. And Trump comes at this from, again, that business perspective where he's the boss of his company. He can do what he wants when he wants. And if it has a good result, fine. If not, you know, he moves on to something else fairly quickly. And what the system works in a quite different way. And again, there are some times when we say that, look, it'd be nice if government was more efficient like businesses, but there are some business aspects that you can't translate into government. And this is the kind of a thing where we're unlike his own business, where he can fire people at will. He can't do that. He can't fire Bob Corker. He can't fire Mitch McConnell or Nancy Pelosi or any of these other leaders. And he has to find a way to work with them. And that's something that he's still having difficulty finding a way to do so.
Patrick in Iowa City mentioned that the comment, the moron comment, this was an interview with Forbes. Trump got asked about reports that Tillerson called Trump a moron. That was after a Pentagon meeting over the summer. Trump responded, "I think it's fake news. But if he did that, I guess we'll have to compare IQ tests and I can tell you who is going to win." Now, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders responded to questions about this in yesterday's press briefing. Let's listen.
How does the president expect his Secretary of State to be effective when he's questioning his intelligence?
Again, he wasn't questioning the Secretary of State's intelligence.
Well,
he made a joke. Maybe you guys should get a sense of humor and try it sometime. But he simply made a joke. He's been extremely clear time and time again, despite the fact that you guys want to continue to bring this up and create a story. He's got 100% confidence in the Secretary of State. He said it multiple times over the last couple of weeks. And we're trying to move forward and focus on the agenda. Why you guys want to move forward and talk about who likes who, when that's simply not what we're doing here.
Okay. Wayne, is the press focusing on this, just kind of twisting it as Sarah Huckabee Sanders would have it there, twisting it as a way we can't take a joke?
I don't think so. Having undermined the Secretary of State in his initial tweet, that has major foreign policy implications in terms of U.S. foreign policy. When you undermine somebody and then later say, well, I really have confidence in that person, what kind of message does that send to other countries where Secretary Tillerson is trying to deal with them? It seems to me that totally undercuts his credibility. They're not sure that what Tillerson is saying will really be backed up by the president. So I think there are major problems here.
Mm-hmm. Here's a source that's not taking it as a joke, at least one person at this source. I know several, actually. Yesterday on the conservative Fox News channel, talk show host Neil Cavuto spoke directly to President Trump, saying that by continuing to disparage representatives on Twitter, he is risking his own agenda. Here's just a fraction of some of the very strong words from the Fox News Channel talk show host.
Mr. Art of the Deal is killing the deal. I'm talking about your deal, Mr. President. I'm actually talking to you, Mr. President. You've got this, and yet you are losing this. Stop me if you've heard this before, actually from me before. It's not that some of your ideas aren't sound. They are. It's that increasingly this erratic behavior is making me wonder whether you are. Now, I know you say that Senator Corker started all of this bad-mouthing you. But last time I checked, you are the president of the United States, so tweeting out these tacky insults, well, it just seems beneath you. And I think it is going to cost you. You're running out of friends faster than you are running out of time. You might not like Bob Corker, but a lot of senators do. And you need those senators, sir. Even assuming some of them have gotten used to this, how long do you think they put up with this? Loyalty works both ways, Mr. President, and whether you think you're justified or not, punching down ain't exactly helping you punch through.
Okay, Fox News host Neil Cavuto. Tim Hagel, I know you survey news from all sources, right, left, middle. This is surprising, isn't it?
Not entirely. I mean, Neil Cavuto was never somebody that was on the Trump train, so to speak, but he was basically trying to give Trump a fair hearing. But
certainly a voice for conservatives on Fox News.
He is certainly on the conservative side, especially in terms of the business sorts of aspects, which is, of course, his expertise. And, you know, at a certain point, and Cavuto is far from the only person that's conservative that has just basically gotten tired and been tired for some time of Trump's behavior in this regard. Now, some people, if they have to work with him, maybe held their tongue a little bit and said, okay, well, you know, move on, kind of a thing, like a Mitch McConnell type of situation. But at a certain point, I think you're going to react like not unlike what Senator Corker did and just basically, you know, respond in kind.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question also stemming from Bob Corker's comments. Here's one of his quotes. Look, except for a few people, the vast majority of our caucus understands what we're dealing with here. Wayne, if this is the consensus, what is among GOP leaders in the Senate, in the House, wherever, if this is the consensus that Bob Corker is communicating, what is preventing more GOP members of Congress from speaking out?
Well, my suspicion is that maybe the most important thing is the tax reform bill and the sense that they'll need the president's support and that that the president will support a bill which is very much consistent with the Republican agenda. And to speak out more may undermine what relationship is left between the particularly the Senate leadership and the president, and that they might not be able to get through the tax bill that they hope that they'll be able to get through.
Is that the way you see it, Tim Hagel?
Yeah, pretty much. One of the reasons that people said that the health care bill failed was that Donald Trump wasn't sufficiently engaged in it. And so they're hoping, at least as far as the tax reform effort is concerned, that Trump is engaged. But if he's engaged in a way that tends to fight with the people that are supposed to be on his side, that's not going to help.
Mm-hmm. Tax reform, What do you see as the chances of tax reform happening in this climate with these relationships deteriorating, Tim Hagel?
Well, I think it's still possible, and less the I think the relationships at this point are less the problem than trying to get enough Republicans in the Senate on board for whatever is going to occur. They have to make sure that you're not going to you have a few hardliners dealing with the deficit, so you have to make sure that it's not going to add to the deficit, at least not in significant ways over the long term. You have to make sure that it's not the rich being benefited, in particular Trump. That's going to be a Democratic complaint. Have to make sure that the middle class, however defined, are going to benefit from this because they're the ones that often deal with the burden of new tax increases or changes. And so those are the kinds of things that you have to make sure you get those at least 50 senators on board, assuming that Pence then casts the deciding vote. And again, that's where Trump has to make sure that he's selling it to the people that he needs to sell it to, whether it's his base so that they can call members of Congress, or he needs to be able to work with the people in Congress, sometimes calling them up saying, hey, can you do this? And the way to do that is not necessarily to throw insults at them.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, how much does this not speaking out on part of the GOP members of Congress, if we were to believe Bob Corker there, one of the GOP leaders in the Senate, how much of it has to do with the 2018 elections? We're just over 1 year away from the 2018 midterm elections.
Well, I certainly think that's a factor. I think the other thing that may be true, I think Trump's base still seems to be solidly behind him. And I think some of the members of Congress, I don't think the Republican majority in the Senate or the very many Republican seats are threatened in the 2018 election, maybe more so in the House. But I suspect some of the deference is that people still see their basic supporters as still supporting Trump and hence are reluctant to speak out.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. In 2018, Tim, perhaps you know this better, that the Democrats are defending over 20 incumbent seats in the Senate, whereas the Republicans less than 10?
Around about that, whatever it is. And and although there are some changes there that a couple of people like Corker who have decided to retire and so forth. So there are a couple of Republican seats in play, but more for the Democrats.
Yeah, Corker in Tennessee, though, we would expect that to stay red.
Probably. Depends on who the candidate's going to be. Although if it's somebody like Representative Marsha Blackburn, there's probably a pretty good chance it'll stay that way, assuming she wins the primary. But, you know, we just kind of have to wait and see what the mood is and what the change is. And we think that normally in a midterm election after a presidential election that the party out of power, which would be the Democrats this time, will gain some seats. But again, because of that imbalance in terms of the number of incumbents, it looks like Democrats probably aren't going to gain any seats that probably try to hold. But as you said before, it's in the House where they may make some gains. Some people are suggesting this possibility that they could even take control, they being the Democrats, take control of the House. I don't think so, but it'll certainly cut the Republican margin.
I've seen the analysis. So, Tim, you don't. Do you laugh at such analysis that the Democrats could take either the Senate or the House?
Don't laugh at it, but, you know, you always have to sort of see what's going to happen when we get a little bit closer. And, again, sometimes it boils down to issues in individual races. I think it will get to, that the Republicans' margin will be reduced, but it seems at this point anyway a stretch to suggest that the Democrats are going to take control of the House.
Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, our political scientist. We hope you'll join us after this break. We're going to continue discussing the latest in politics. What do we have on our docket? Obstruction of justice, that thought further explored in the Russia investigation. Carter Page, former foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, says he's not going to be cooperating with any requests by the Senate Intelligence Committee. Also talk about the environment, healthcare, rollbacks by the Trump administration on Obama's workings. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a few minutes.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
We're midstream in this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, our political scientists this week as we survey what's been happening on the political landscape. We'd like to have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. Talking a lot about the Trump-Corker feud in the first half hour, the impact that may have on the legislative agenda. Let's talk about a couple of Obama-era changes that are being rolled back by this administration. The Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt announced he will move to repeal the so-called Clean Power Plan. This is a signature Obama-era climate strategy to cut carbon dioxide emissions from coal-fired power plants. Your reaction, what are you seeing there, Wayne? Explain the administration's thinking there. Is this a case of carrying through on a campaign promise?
Yeah, I think it is that, and it's also the importance of coal-producing states for the Trump constituency, Kentucky and West Virginia standing out, particularly big coal-producing states that were critical to Trump's victory. I think what's going on here, though, is there are two things working against it. One, power companies have made investments to go more toward shifting from coal to natural gas, because natural gas is cheaper, and so the market is working against Trump, and the investments of power companies themselves are working against Trump. So my sense is that companies will still be reducing their emissions, even though the Trump policy is going in the other direction.
Okay, the overhaul, repeal and replace of Obamacare didn't happen, but we had the now some adjustments by this president. New rules from the Department of Health and Human Services will let businesses or nonprofit organizations lodge religious or moral objections to obtain an exemption from the law's mandate that employers provide contraceptives coverage in health insurance with no copayment. Now, this is something that's being applauded by Christian conservatives, by congressional Republicans, others, Democrats are criticizing it. Tim, Obamacare already made an exemption, did it not, for religious-based companies to not pay for contraception?
No, the exception that the Obama administration made was more directly to specific religious organizations like churches and things of that nature, where this one is a little bit broader in terms of what's going on. So if you have a company, just say like Hobby Lobby, where they're the owners of that company, privately held company, if they decide that based on their religious beliefs that they don't want to fund this particular thing or make it available, that they could do so based on this religious exemption. And so it's not quite as broad as you would have some of the people that are opposed to this suggest. It's not some kind of thing where the companies are going to completely stop doing this.
This does not mean any organization can get an exemption.
No.
Just say no.
No, they have to have, and they're going to have to be able to show that. They can't just have some company say, hey, we don't want to pay for that. Yeah, we've got a religious objection. They're going to have something that's clear in the base. And, you know, even some companies, especially ones that are publicly held, you know, articles have indicated that, you know, they won't want to displease their shareholders by all of a sudden and coming out this because there'll be opposition if they don't have this available, this funding available. So it'll probably be a fairly narrow exemption, but it's something that got a lot of political traction that people say, hey, you know, and especially when you're talking about, now this wouldn't necessarily apply in this group, but like with the lawsuit against the Little Sisters of the Poor saying, you know, why do nuns need to have to worry about contraceptive or providing it kind of a thing? And so that got some political traction as well. So this is an exemption that's there. It'll probably be used by a few additional companies, but it's not going to be anywhere near as broad as what some people are suggesting.
What about this in the healthcare area? Now, for months here on IPR, we've been reporting on this. Iowa officials, our senators, our governor, seeking federal permission to revitalize the ailing health insurance market here in Iowa under Obamacare. The Washington Post now reporting that President Trump personally, according to the Washington Post, told a top federal health official to reject Iowa's pending request to try to stabilize the individual insurance market with a waiver from Obamacare rules. What do you make of this, Tim Hagel, this report part of a larger undermining of the Affordable Care Act, if true, by the Trump administration?
Yeah, you know, we've seen that story for a couple of days, and I'm still not quite sure what to make of it. We know that Trump has come out a couple of times and indicated that, well, maybe the thing to do is to just let Obamacare collapse and then, you know, pick up the pieces afterwards. And most people, including most Republicans, don't want to see that happen because of the damage that it would cause, you know, among their constituents and their individual states and so forth. And so that's why you have even Republican states like Iowa, where we have a Republican governor and two Republican senators. Senators have spoken out and said, you know, hey, we need to have this stopgap measure put in place. If Trump is saying, no, don't do it, maybe it's part of that grander strategy to try to force something through at the national level on Obamacare. And then sometimes I wonder if he's sort of getting back at Iowa because he didn't win the caucuses. That would seem to be a stretch. But, you know, we've seen him sort of do these things in the past. But the final decision hasn't been made, so we have to wait until it's finally made in a few days or a few weeks before we see what the outcome is.
All right, missing that caucus win. Senator Cruz beating him by a hair here
right.
in Iowa. Seems like eons ago.
Well, one thing that strikes me is this may be another one of those impulsive things that he didn't think through before he actually came out and said it, and maybe the people around him over time will cool him off, and maybe that his resistance to this will then be dropped.
Let's go to a caller in Cedar Rapids, 1-866-780-9100, if you'd like to join our conversation. Don, hi, in Cedar Rapids.
Yes. Good morning.
We're just into the afternoon. What's on your mind as we move our way through this political landscape?
Well, I'm a retired engineer and lived in Iowa most of my life. And as over the last 40 years, as an engineer, we kind of look at situations and summarize. And what I see an unrest in America during these 40 years and is gradually increasing. And as Americans, we think all we have to do is change the president because he's the scapegoat. So we reelect a new guy, and then we wait 4 years and judge that. So one of the things that I'd like us to do sometime on your program is let's not focus on the president. And, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I do know that I think a lot of the reasons why he got elected not a whole lot of things are working for us like they used to. For example, in 2015, the Wall Street Journal reported that the American economy earned more wealth per capita than any time in our history of a country, except 80% of that wealth went to less than 8% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
We also used to have the best schools and universities in the world, world.
Let me cut you off if I may, Don. We talk about the president, of course, a lot. The president's relationship with an all Republican Congress. We have an interesting president at the moment. So, what do you think is if you're expressing the frustration undoubtedly felt by many Americans? What is at the heart of it? What needs to be addressed? Is it campaign finance? Is it different redistricting laws?
No. You're getting closer to it. Is the fact that there are a lot of there's a lot of power in money today, and I'm really disappointed that the Supreme Court associated wealth with free speech, and I think we're suffering for that. And then we're beginning to see how gerrymandering. You know, we go to the polls and we elect. But really, the only thing that really comes out as maybe a sense of what the people are thinking of is the presidential election. Down at the lower levels, it's almost here in Iowa, for example, there's parts of it that are just fixed in a certain party and will never change until we get a better way of sensing where the finances are in that guide and win elections. And
okay.
I'm disappointed with the focus of the infrastructure, like our education, especially our education.
All right, Don, a lot to talk about there. We've got to move on, but we get the sense of what you're saying. Thank you so much for your call. 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk a little bit about immigration. We had this on the weekend, the president's immigration wish list. Some call it a it is a hardline immigration set of hardline immigration demands, building the border wall, strengthening the enforcement of immigration laws, many other things on this list we were talking about yesterday on the program. This comes just days, maybe a couple of weeks, after there was some kind of soft deal between the president and Minority Leader Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Now this is where? Where is immigration, Tim Hagel?
Well, apparently Pelosi and Schumer are not particularly happy with this plan. You know, the thing is, with speaking of the DACA, the Dreamers, and dealing with that, that most Republicans, or at least a lot of Republicans, would be perfectly happy to figure out some way that those folks can stay, that they don't want to deport some, the figures usually said 800,000 people that fall into this category. But the thing that a lot of Republicans are concerned about is, well, we don't want to grant amnesty and then have this come back again. That's what happened in the 80s under Reagan. They're not going to basically fall for that again, so to speak. But the problem is that Democrats don't want those additional security things, whether it's a wall or something else or dealing with sanctuary cities. And so that's where you have to have that compromise. You know, if you want to protect the Dreamers, then you're going to have to – Democrats would basically need to agree to some of these things that Trump is proposing, and they just don't want to see those in place.
Wayne Moyer, do you see a hope of comprehensive immigration reform?
I don't see hope of comprehensive immigration reform. I think we may get some kind of DACA bill through, although I worry if you get too many things attached to it, the more things you attach to it, the more difficult it will be to get it through Congress. And so I hope that there'll be some compromises made there, and so that it will be possible to get that through. But not, I think comprehensive reform is not in the cards, at least in the immediate future.
Always simmering in the background of our political conversations over the past few months, the Russia investigation, a new report here. President Trump, in the words of this new report, likely obstructed justice when he fired FBI Director James Comey, could face impeachment. This, according to an analysis from the Brookings Institution, admittedly a liberal-leaning think tank, 108-page report issued yesterday, concluding that even though the president had the authority to fire Comey, he could not do so if the intention was to get in the way of the ongoing investigation. Wayne, your reaction to this analysis, based, you know, the president undermined that first story about why Comey was fired in an interview, I believe, with NBC News shortly thereafter. Is there another conclusion the special counsel could come to that he didn't obstruct justice, or could that term be interpreted differently?
Well, I think the term can be interpreted differently. I mean, the Brookings report in terms of Trump taking action, at least in terms of discouraging Comey from proceeding with the Russia investigation, could be seen as obstruction of justice. But it could be—I think it could be interpreted how seriously was Trump trying to stop Comey from proceeding. You know, to me, the important thing is, well, when does Mueller's report come out?
Right.
And then how does Congress react to it? Impeachment is a political process. It's not a judicial process. So a lot of it, I think, depends on what the political atmosphere, what Mueller has to say and what the political atmosphere is at the time that he releases his report. And I don't have a clue yet in terms of when he's going to get his report out.
Do you have any clue, Tim Hagel? We are looking, special counsel Robert Mueller, many facets of this investigation, a lot of guesswork, speculation being done in the political press.
No, they'll have no clue in terms of when he's going to issue his report. Sometimes one of the complaints we've often heard about any kind of, whether it's called special counsel, independent counsel, whatever, that they tend to sort of get into things and then get deeper and deeper and, you know, sort of branch out in various ways. And so they basically would want to wait until they've completed everything or every aspect that they feel is worth investigating before they come out with a report. But I would say, as far as the obstruction of justice claim is concerned, and I didn't read the whole 108 pages of analysis there, but you can probably make a case, but you're making a lot of assumptions along the way. And in fact, they talk about this in the introduction, saying, well, the facts as we know them now. Well, the problem is that we don't know a lot of facts. And they're also hinging this on the idea that there was some corrupt intent on the part of Trump, as opposed to maybe a general intent. If you think that, you know, if Trump believes that he really didn't do anything wrong and he's being unfairly investigated, then there'd be a certain desire, reasonable, to want to shut down what he thinks is an unfair investigation. And certainly, as I tell my students in my criminal justice course, that when you're talking about obstruction of justice, you certainly have defense attorneys are constantly trying to, you know, hinder a prosecution and investigation, but in a way that's considered legal or appropriate. And that's the question, is whether or at what point has somebody crossed the line? And I think we just don't have enough information to make any kind of conclusion on that at this point, at least separated from the political side of things.
Okay. Along those lines of shutting down this investigation, today in a tweet, Donald Trump suggesting that NBC's broadcast license should be pulled as punishment after that report by NBC News stating that the president sought an increase in the nation's nuclear arsenal. Here's the tweet from the president this morning. Fake at NBC News made up a story that I wanted to tenfold increase in our U.S. nuclear arsenal. Pure fiction made up to demean NBC. To demean NBC equals CNN. With all the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for the country. Now, the license holders are not the network, by the way. Iowa Public Radio has no license to this. NBC doesn't have any licenses. Those are held by individual stations. But I suppose that's beside the point. I don't know if you saw that from this morning, Wayne, and you had any thoughts?
I didn't see that specifically, but Trump has been attacking the media all along for unfair coverage, and it seems to me that this is just another example of it. And I think this also is an effort to appeal to his base, which also is very critical of the media. But my sense is nothing will come out of it.
Donald Trump Jr. will be in Iowa next month to join Representative Steve King of Iowa's 4th District for the congressman's annual pheasant hunt. What other things do we have to pick up on? Oh, also another person coming to Iowa, actor Alec Baldwin, coming to Iowa this November to headline the Iowa Democratic Party's annual fundraising event known as the Jefferson Jackson Dinner. Baldwin, of course, well known for his biting portrayal of President Trump on Saturday Night Live. He received an Emmy Award for it. Let's go toward the end of this program with a clip from one of his latest skits mocking the president's response to hurricane recovery pleas from Puerto Rico.
Sir, Mayor Cruz of San Juan is on the line.
I was expecting this phone call. Sure, she wants to tell me what a great job I'm doing. Yes, Mayor, you wanted to talk to me?
Yes, Mr. President, I'm so glad to have you on the phone. I'm begging you. Puerto Rico needs your help.
I hear you loud and clear, and you called the best person for the job. Trust me, I know things are, as the locals say, despacito. We're going to get you more help to you. We'll get you immediately, probably by Tuesday or Wednesday at the latest.
Mr. President, that's not good enough.
Well, you should have paid your bills. FEMA takes a few days unless you join FEMA Prime.
What are you talking about?
Ma'am, I don't know if you know this, but you're in an island in the water. The ocean water, big ocean, with fishies and bubbles and turtles that bite. We want to help you, but we have to take care of America first.
Wait, you do know we're a U.S. territory, don't you?
I mean, I do, but not many people know that, no.
Okay, Alec Baldwin in his portrayal of Saturday Night Live, President Trump. As we go out, give us, each of you, a status report on where the Democrats find themselves, and especially with all this infighting in the GOP. Tim.
Well, the infighting in the GOP is getting a lot of the media attention, but the Democrats have some identity issues to deal with, too, in terms of the difference between what might be considered establishment versus the more progressive wing of the party. And so that's something that they're going to have to work out and find candidates that they can run, especially in more competitive districts, to challenge those Republican incumbents.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Wayne Moyer?
Well, I very much agree with Tim on that. That you still have the split between the Hillary people, the more moderate Democrats, and the Bernie Sanders people, and can they actually come together, and can they agree on an agenda, and can they get behind candidates that both groups can support, and can they find candidates who really stand out and are attractive to the electorate?
Mm-hmm. This Jefferson Jackson dinner is traditionally a place where we might see some candidates.
Can't call it that anymore.
Can't call it what anymore?
Jefferson Jackson.
Why not?
those names are now verboten.
Oh, I see. I see where you're going.
Jackson is too much associated with President Trump, I'm afraid.
It hasn't been renamed. You're just because I played SNL, you're joking with me, right, Tim?
Sort of.
Okay, but regardless, this is sort of a fundraising event, is it not, where we typically see candidates for the next presidential primary?
Yeah, and we've actually seen a few maybe potential presidential candidates in 2020 coming in at a couple of Democratic events. And so we'll start to see that warm up a little bit more as we get closer, in particular to the 2018 elections, because that's where some of these candidates will come in and help the potential candidates for 2020 for the presidency come in and help the 2018 candidates here in Iowa.
Okay. Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Thank you both, and thanks to our listeners for their input this hour, Politics Wednesday edition of River to River. Wayne and Tim, thank you so much.
Thank you,
welcome.
Ben.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Ben Stanton, along with Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I want to mention that on Wednesday night, you can join us for IPR's Great Iowa Potluck, Wednesday, October 18th at 5 p.m. at the Park Lodge at Terry Trueblood Recreation Area in Iowa City. I'll be there. Charity Nebbe will be there. Bring a dish, and we'll have some conversation. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.